It's time for Teach Me What You Know, our weekly segment where we learn a new skill. Last week, a Wisconsin farmer taught us how to make maple syrup.
Well, change of pace this week. Our guest looked into strategies to help us find a life partner. He's Tim Urban, co-founder and writer at Wait But Why. You can find him online at waitbutwhy.com. Tim, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, really good. Well, let's start with the basics. Why is the process of choosing a life partner so important?
You know, it seems like it should be obvious. I feel like what I wrote about was completely and utterly obvious, and people should have read it and said, you know,
duh.
And instead, people said, you know, wow, I never thought of it that way, and that's why I wrote the post, because I just think it's obviously so important, and people, for some reason, maybe it's that it's just too daunting to think of how important it actually is.
Well,
and it's just easier to pretend it's not, you know, that it's all going to all work out on its own anyway, but yeah.
Well, that's the thing. People think, and you mentioned this, that it should be easy. We'll meet our soulmate. It'll just happen magically. We shouldn't overanalyze. This is not something you can engage your brain in. Why is that counterproductive?
Yeah, it's amazing. That's the thing that that you need your brain to be the sharpest for, that you need all of your wits about you for, more than you need it for anything in your career or anything else that happens. That's the thing that we decide, yeah, don't think about it. Don't think about it. Don't go out of your way to work too hard to find it. It's the kind of thing that just works out on its own. But that's not true. Look at all the bad relationships around you. Look at all the bad marriages around you. It's not, that is a false hypothesis there.
Well, part of the problem is there's this magical spark we have with someone, but does that play out over, you know, the long haul, 30, 40, 50 years? Is that where we start to get into trouble?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the natural spark is really important. I think a really good 50-year marriage probably should start with some kind of exciting spark. It's just that, you know, if 10 things can get, you know, can get that spark going for you, probably one or two of those might be actually something that can sustain. And people need to think about, you know, they need to think about that part as well, not just the spark. The spark is not enough reason right there. It's like, you know, it's like walking into a restaurant and liking the vibe and deciding, you know, you're going to eat every meal there for the rest of your life without really looking at the menu, without looking at the nutrition, without, you know. It's just a weird thing to not think that hard about, yeah.
All right, well, let's start from the beginning. Supposing we're looking not for just a life partner, but a good life partner, what should we be looking for in another person?
Let me just also start by saying that I'm 32, and I'm not an expert on this. I'm not a relationship expert. I'm not married. I have relatively thin relationship experience.
But Tim, you're a blogger, and that's the important thing.
Yeah, exactly. There's all the credibility I could ever want. No, the fact is, this is not I don't think that this is, you know, I wasn't trying to advise anyone on how to be in a marriage and how to be a good husband or wife. Mm-hmm. That I'm really no pro on at all. But I think that everyone is a pro on how to be a life partner if you just think hard about it for a second. If you just think logically about it for a second, I think that, you know, it's not about experience, it's about logic. And just thinking about the facts of what a marriage entails. How many hours, how many dinners, how many years, and you're raising kids together, and you're going on every vacation together. And those statistics alone is all you need to be able to write this post and to be able to think about this. So that's kind of where I was coming from with it.
And you talk about a traffic test to help evaluate someone. What is that?
Right. Okay. So for me, the friends in my life, they, like everyone, they range. I have some that are more acquaintances that I can kind of see twice a year, and that's about the max. There are some that I can see once or twice a month, and that's great. But after I see them, I don't really want to see them the next day or the day after necessarily. Then there are some friends who I like to see a lot. I can see them Monday. I can see them again Tuesday. That's great. And of those friends, there are a few that I would say pass what I call the traffic test, which basically means you leave, it's just this hypothetical scenario, you leave a restaurant, and your car is, maybe they picked you up, and they're driving you back to your car. And there's a certain kind of friend, a certain quality of friendship and connection where you're really rooting for traffic when they're driving you because you're having so much fun talking to them. It could go on for another hour. The time is flying. You don't even feel like you've begun to get to all the things you want to talk about with them, even though you've been with them for 3 hours. And if there's traffic on the road, you're secretly happy. You say, oh, good, good, I'm going to have more time in this car. And that's really hard to find, as everyone can say. I mean, that's not an easy kind of friendship to find. Most friends, 3 hours is not only enough for that moment, you're ready to get in the car and leave that person, but, you know, really, you kind of, again, you're fine for the next week or 2 weeks not seeing that person. So if you have someone in your life who you're rooting for traffic for, or multiple friends, you got to make sure your life partner is one of those people. That's the person you are spending every single day with, every single dinner with, or most of them. You're going on vacation for days and days and days. If that's not the kind of person that you just love spending time with and you can't get enough of it, what a shame. And that's a failure.
And that's an example of another thing you bring up, the idea that we need to think small when we're evaluating spending our lives with someone. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think this applies to a lot of things. It's not romantic. It's not really, definitely doesn't make for a good storybook romantic concept. But to me, life partnership is, in the end, yes, there are Valentine's days within there. Yes, there are. There's the honeymoon at the beginning, and there's going to be some amazing moments when you just have a really special night with your life partner. But almost the entire time you're going to spend with this person is going to be on what I call a forgettable Wednesday. a mundane weekday. That's life. In the end, it's 90 plus, maybe 99 plus percent of life is kind of just a day that's not really special. Nothing big happens, nothing that amazing happens, and it's just kind of a normal Wednesday. And if you the key in general, I'm thinking in life is just to make sure you can be happy on that Wednesday. That's not overjoyed. That's not realistic, but to be generally content, enjoying yourself. And right, and so with a life partner, got to think about not, this is going to be the best person to climb Kilimanjaro with in that amazing trip we're going to take sometime in 10 years. That's not what you need to think about. It's on the 4,000th random Wednesday, is this person just a really great part of that Wednesday? Are they making that Wednesday a little bit better? Are we just coexisting really easily and pleasantly, and is it a rich, you know, existence together on that Wednesday? And that's the fabric of life right there. That's what it's not. Again, it's not very romantic idea, but I think that's just reality. If you look at the percentage of your days, that's what most of them are like.
Here's a key that's been really important, I think, for my wife in finding me as a life partner, being ready to accept and maybe even appreciate flaws in the other person.
Yeah. This is looking at this fact. Every single person in the world is flawed. And even some people, if flawed is a weird word, I mean, everyone just is a certain way. And people are very complicated. There's not quality A, B, and C. No, there are hundreds of qualities of a human. There's them when they're bored. There's how they are when they're anxious, when they're tired, when they're cranky. All these things, and you can call them flaws or whatever you want, but really it's just it's not the best bite of the pizza. That's kind of the crust of the person. And there's all kinds of not so great parts of a human. And the person who's really going to get to know those parts better than anyone else ever will is your life partner. And so it's got to be a situation where those things aren't such a conflict with the person that they cause continual fights, that you feel continually not accepted, not embraced, and you feel this pressure this tension to kind of change and be different than who you are from this person. Likewise, you don't want to feel that. You don't want to feel like this person is going to be great. It's just as soon as they can change a little into this. And I'm just going to get them to kind of stop being this way, and then it'll be perfect. That's definitely not what people should be thinking about, because I don't really believe in the people don't change thing. Yeah, sure, people can change, but it comes from within, and it comes from their own desire for, you know, over lots of work and hard work on their own part. So, yes, I think it's critical to, A, realize this, just understand this, that if you're trying to have a non-flawed human being as your life partner, you're going to search forever, because that's not possible. And, B, you know, you want to find someone who their particular flaws kind of actually click with you, and you're kind of like, yeah, I get that. I get why they're like that, because I'm like that sometimes. And, hey, it's totally understandable. It's something you just accept in life, and that's really the only way to be.
So we've got these and some other criteria that we're looking for in a life partner, in a relationship. How do we expand our horizons to find a person who's a good match with that?
Yeah, so this is I just think, one of the craziest parts of our society, is that we're basically told, don't look too hard, don't be organized in how you're looking, definitely, you know, don't do anything too calculating in how you're trying to find the right person. Just be and exist, and it'll happen by itself. This is the advice even for people who don't like to go out to bars, who aren't that social, people who really are around their apartment a lot, or they're out with just a couple good friends. Those people are still told, yeah, well, you know, you'll run into him or her somewhere. To me, that's just so ludicrous. It's as crazy as someone who's around their apartment being told, you know, your dream career will find you. Just do your thing, and your career will find you. That's, of course, not what you'd say. That you need to think about hard, what you're good at, what you like. You need to experiment. You need to try things. You need to get out there. You need to make it happen. Then you need to be organized. You need to follow up with people. You need to build a network. You need to keep track of that network. That's how people are told to have a really good career. And you're supposed to really be the smartest human you can be about that and approaching it. With a life partner, that's even more necessary. And what society does is it tells you, if, you know, I use the hypothetical in the post, what if someone had a spreadsheet and they kept track of everyone they went on a date with and what went right and what went wrong, what they learned from it. That even someone listening right now to me is probably thinking, well, that's a little weird. And even I kind of think, well, that's a little weird. It's only weird because society tells us that's not romance. This is romance. This is, you know, what are you doing? You're being way too rational. You're thinking too much. You're being way too organized about this. It's creepy. It's calculated. It's too cold and rational. One example of that's actually changing finally is that online dating for a long time had a stigma. And even just the word, it's called online dating. All it is online meeting people, and then in-person dating is what it actually is. And that's such an obvious thing. That's such a great way to, you can sort by, you know, a certain criteria. You can search for people who actually ring a bell with you and when you read their profile. And before you even go out with someone, you know you have a decent amount in common. You can expand well beyond your social networks. You can expand beyond who you happen to be by luck. And if you're not someone who goes out a lot, you can, this is a great way to meet people and on a date. Only in a society that is really thinking about this the total wrong way would that ever have a stigma against it. So now, luckily, fortunately, that is seeming to change. I feel like the online thing is finally starting to just be accepted.
But. Well, Tim, I hope you help some people get smarter about this. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Have a great day.
That was Tim Urban, co-founder and writer at Wait But Why. You can find it at waitbutwhy.com. That was our Teach Me What You Know segment for the week, where we teach you how to do something, make maple syrup, do your taxes. Next week, how to fill out the forms and apply under the Affordable Care Act.